Hello, everyone, and welcome to PRT. That's Paranormal Roundtable. I'm your host, Josh Turner, also known as Wolf. And you can always find us at prtpodcast.com. We're also on YouTube and many other platforms. And my email address is josh turner at prtpodcast.com, josh turner at prtpodcast.com. You can go there. We have an area for artwork submissions. You can check out all of our different shows. We have various groups on Facebook. We have a Paranormal Roundtable Facebook group. Please go and join that. We have a lot of cool discussions, a lot of stuff. I know a lot of people don't like Facebook. They don't want to be on Facebook, whatever. Well, join Facebook just to be in the groups and then don't do anything else. And then we got Paranormal Encounters, which is run by Mushu, who's also a part-time co-host. And then we have Paranormal Lounge, which is run by Nelly, which is my wife. And we have A Whisper to a Scream podcast with Ryan Tremblay. That's his group. And he's also my co-host on another show called A Whisper to a Scream. And that show airs on Sunday nights. We've had a few problems trying to get it going in the early episodes, but we're getting it going now. And but it's lands every Sunday, and then on Friday our show PRT here at Paranormal Roundtable lands at 7 o'clock on Friday nights, 7 p.m. Central. That's Central time. And Ryan's, I believe, is around 7:15 Central. And also, we do a Q&A at 7:30 p.m. Central on Tuesday nights for PRT. So all that being said, we get all this out of the way. We are running art contests at all times. We're doing some kind of contest. And as always, we do a book giveaway every week for as long as supplies last. You could get you an autographed book anywhere from Linda Godfrey, Nick Redfern. We got Chad Lewis, Ken Gerhard, Lyle Blackburn, and Lon Strickler. So we got all those people's autographed books. We got a stockpile of those, and we give them away every week. So all that out of the way, all that being said, tonight I have a special guest. She's someone who's pretty big in the cryptid world, the Dogman field. She has a group. It's called Dogman Believers Only, and she is the admin, her and her buddy Cindy. They are the admins for this group, and I believe it is the largest Dogman group. Isn't it the largest Dogman group, Carrie?
Yeah, it is, I think.
Yeah.
I haven't looked at member count lately, but yeah.
Yeah, you're pretty much the...
I think we're one of the oldest, too.
Oh, definitely. Definitely one of the oldest. Yeah, and I think you were one of the first that I joined. But you're a very large group, and we met years ago when I was doing shows on Dogman Encounters Radio, and you've been a supporter of my work and of my research and of my show, and I appreciate it. Thank you, and thank you for coming on and talking to me. Tonight we're going to talk about Dogman and some Bigfoot, and you're going to tell us about your encounter with what could be a Dogman. We're not 100% if it was a Dogman or a werewolf or what it was, but we're gonna talk about it. And so to get us started, how long have you been with the Dogman Believers group?
7 or 8 years.
Jeez, dang. Okay, so that's a long time. You've been at it for a while. So
yeah.
So you've been studying and researching this phenomenon for a long time.
Well, I think the best way to explain it is I am kind of a strange person. Most people that meet me would agree with that. But I'm strange because I've encountered a lot of strange things. And I understand that life isn't exactly what, it's not the cut and dry. And I'm never going to follow that path. I'm never going to be that person. So I'm just going to own up and say, I'm strange because my life has been strange, and it's all of my life. I mean, I've had encounters with something or another most of my life.
And you haven't encountered like multiple things. Like you've had more than just that, that werewolf encounter. You've had encounters with Bigfoot, right?
Yeah. Lots of encounters with Bigfoot.
Yeah. And this goes back to your childhood.
Yeah. I mean, even farther into my childhood than what I can remember.
What do you mean by that? Like further back in your childhood than you can remember?
Well, my mother told me a story about when I was a baby. Now, I was born in California. My parents lived in, I believe, Petaluma. And they were from Colorado, and they had moved to California. And when they were living in California, my mother discovered she was pregnant. She wasn't supposed to be able to get pregnant again, but she discovered she was pregnant. So she carried me, and I was born in July. And my mom wanted my crib to be in a window so that I could see the sun, so that I could be, you know, kind of blessed by the sun. My mother was, her mother was Native American. So that was very strong, you know, something she wanted, that connection to the earth and those blessings. So I shared a room with my sister who would have been 8. And apparently my sister had walked into the room and screamed. And all my mother heard was my sister screaming. And it was that scream that if you have children, you know something's wrong and you can't get there fast enough. So when my mother came in, my sister was babbling and screaming about a monster was looking in the window. And that window was pretty high off the ground. Of course, I don't remember that house. I was an infant. I had just been born. And apparently a Bigfoot was looking in the window at me in my crib. And she, you know, they found the footprints outside the window and everything. And then my parents opted to move back to Colorado. And I think by the time I was about 4 weeks old, they moved back to Colorado. So I don't know if that made them move or if they were already planning to move. Nobody would really answer those questions for me. But, you know, it was ongoing after that.
Did your sister get a description of it?
My sister won't talk about it. She said she remembers it, but she won't talk about it. My mother really only, her only elaboration was it was a Bigfoot. And my dad used to say, well, there were Bigfoot in California, but they're not in Colorado. And then he saw one with my son. I wasn't even home when it happened, but he got the attention of a local police officer because he was pointing a gun looking through the scope, but he was pointing the gun at the window looking through the scope, and the officer, you know, had a big picture window in his house, and the officer was driving down the street and he hit the brakes, walking up to the door with his hand on the gun, on his gun, going, you know, what's going on here? Thinking there's going to be a mass shooting or something. And my dad pointed up at the hill, and you could see it without looking in the scope, you know, the hills. I don't know. We lived in the mountains, but there was a range of hills that went across from the north end down south. So they ran, you know, in a line. They were called the Seven Hermits, and it was on the last one closest. Well, I guess it was on the second one from what it was, how it was explained to me. And my dad told me that night when I got home, he said, yeah, and I always believed you that you were seeing something, but I'll be damned. He had never encountered anything like that before. And me, secretly, I always thought if I could just explain it to him better, that he'd go, oh, that's one of those, because he knew everything. The man was a genius. I mean, he was one of the men that discovered Vail, Colorado. He was known at his funeral. They said that he was the man that knew mountains, and he did. I mean, I've heard stories about him going, you know, taking my brother to go camping, dropping him off, and my brother going 50 miles the wrong direction, and my dad showing up in the middle of the night and asking for a cup of coffee. Or he tracked him knowing, you know, my brother went the wrong way knowing it wasn't supposed to go that way. But my dad tracked him down in the middle of the night. So, you know, I mean, the man was insanely in tune with wildlife in the mountains. It was shocking to me that he didn't know what it was.
So that was his first encounter with one of these creatures?
Yeah. He had never, well, he'd seen footprints, but he'd never seen the actual creature.
Yeah, I got a friend that lives up in Leadville, and he's convinced that when he goes out hiking, and that's not far from Vail, but he's convinced that there's a Sasquatch habitation around where he lives. Like, he goes out in the woods, and he believes that they're there. They're close by.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Yeah.
You know
first
where Leadville's at?
I remember having. Yeah, absolutely. I've been to Leadville many times. First encounter I remember having was in there used to be a ski lodge there, and it was called Meadow Mountain. Vail was started as a ski resort, and then a guy came along, and he owned the mountain next to it. So there's Highway 6 runs in between and goes to Leadville. So as you're going towards Minturn, everything that's on your left-hand side, if you go up the mountain, top of the mountain is Vail. If you everything on the right-hand side, right there at the interchange, that bottom, it's called Meadow Mountain. But it backs up, and the mountain goes up, and it backs up into what's now Beaver Creek. And it's not far from Tigawan Trail, where Mount of the Holy Cross is. It's, you know, not very far to go to Minturn. And, you know, from Minturn, you go up the hill and you Red Cliff, and then you have Lutton, you get into Leadville. But you climb from about 8,000, what is it, 8160, 8150 is the elevation of Vail at the village. And you climb up to Leadville is over 10,000 feet.
Yeah, Leadville was, it made me. I had altitude sickness when I drove out there, and I got out there pretty quick, and I just, you know, it's an ascent. And yeah, I got kind of sick. We got back down to Frisco, and then we went to Brackenridge, and I ended up needing oxygen. Of course, I was extremely overweight at that time, and yeah, it was kind of rough on me. But yeah, that area, it looks like Bigfoot habitation.
Oh, absolutely, 100%. And like I said, Meadow Mountain, I had the first encounter that I remember when I was about 5 years old at Meadow Mountain. And learned later about the measurements of a Bigfoot body. So you take Bigfoot, and their distance from the knee to the ankle is much longer than the distance from the knee to the ankle in a human. And I know that to be true. I mean, when I was reading these different, you know, postulations about, you know, based off of Patty, you know, and all these different things, I was like, well, that's spot on. Because if a Bigfoot squats down, if a person squats down, your knees are still pretty low, right? You're not going to be able to put your chin on your knees. If a Bigfoot squats down, their chin is between their knees.
Well, that's not necessarily true for me, because I'm very flexible. I'm like Gumby. I can touch my foot to my head, and I can do all kinds of weird yoga poses. I'm pretty amazing. I'm just kidding. I'm obviously not kidding.
Now that's just obviously, you know, that's because you're a werewolf.
Damn! Don't say things like that, because I'll be getting some. You know, we were talking about that off air, and I told that guy in the line at the grocery store, and because I had that lycanthrope shirt on. Remember the story I told you? And I was like, hey, I'm a werewolf. And I was like, you know, I'd have been burned at the stake, you know, if this was 300 or 400 years ago. Maybe not even that long ago, 200 years ago. But
you got to keep the joke alive, right?
Yeah, you got to keep the joke. People are always teasing that I'm a werewolf, that Vic's a werewolf. You know, I'm like, okay. I'm like, ha, 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 be quiet. Don't make me have to find you. But no. No, so you've seen all these Bigfoot. And can I ask you a question? Do they all kind of look, the ones that you yourself, Carrie, have seen personally, do they all seem to kind of fit in the same sort of category? Or are they different types, different variants that you've seen?
Most of the Bigfoot that I've seen have been in Colorado. I didn't, you know, when I was in Missouri, I had some encounters with Bigfoot, and that was just a couple of years ago. Because I kind of left Colorado in 2015, and I've kind of wandered state to state trying to find a place to get on my feet. And I was in Missouri for about a year and a half, year and a half, something like that. Maybe not quite a year. I don't remember. But anyway, while I lived there, I didn't actually get a good look at them. I didn't have an up close sighting, but I knew they were there because they were moving tree branches around and making glyphs and turning them into the same predictable patterns. And I think it's reinforced for me that you just always, you know, if you're not in tune with your environment, you're going to miss a lot of the clues that they give. But I've always told people, and people get creeped out by it, but I'm not saying it to be creepy. Guaranteed, you might never see that Sasquatch. You might never see that Dogman, but they see you. And that scares the crap out of people.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. And we talked about this, you know. One of the things that I believe, and you kind of agreed with me too, is that there are certain people who I think can see them, and they exist on a different vibration, and I think that they're able to manifest themselves. I know that I have never seen a Bigfoot, I've never seen a Sasquatch, but me and my wife were working at an assignment one time, and I saw something large and brown, and I saw it. I saw it run, and I saw it from behind, and I cannot tell you what that was. So my wife says, okay, I've seen a Bigfoot. I was like, well, you can say you've seen a Bigfoot. Neither one of us saw the head or the face, so there's no way to know what the heck that was. I mean, she's like, well, unless it was a cow running upright, and it didn't have the shape or composition of a Dogman, because I've seen a Dogman / werewolf type creature, and it didn't look anything like that. So it was huge and blocky, and we thought it was a tree stump, and it got up and moved, but it was dark, and there was no way, and it happened so quick, there was no way for us to ascertain that that's what it was. And I haven't gotten a whole lot of reports of Sasquatch in that area, so I have no, but there are Dogman reports in that area. So I told my wife, I said, we don't know what that was. So I don't really claim that as a Bigfoot sighting, and I've never really seen one. I was at a birthday party as a child, and a bunch of kids claimed to have seen this ape-like creature in the window, but I didn't see it. So I can't claim it. I cannot claim that I've seen a Bigfoot. That's something I've always wanted to see. Was not hoping to see the Dogman. And I saw it, it just kind of happened. But I don't think anybody's like, you know, usually when people see it, they're not really planning on it. They're not out there, you know, it just happens, you know.
Right.
When people are tromping out there looking for it, they never seem to find it. You know, it's weird.
Mm-hmm.
But
No, like there's a letter organization that report that, you know, they've been accumulating reports for a long time. And they have, you know, A, B, C, D. And one of those letters is a sighting where you think you heard something, but you don't know what it is.
Yeah.
Okay. You don't know. You don't have any idea what that is, but you're going to call it a Bigfoot sighting. There's a lot of things out there when you start talking about lore and legends. And, you know, there were 500 nations, and they didn't all agree, and they were not identical. You can't say Indian and be talking about somebody from the East Coast and then make the same assumption for their culture and talk about somebody that was from the West Coast. They were totally different.
Yeah.
In a lot of respect.
Yeah, if you're talking about the Algonquin, they're night and day from the Klamath. It's just completely two different things.
Exactly.
Yeah.
So there were 500 nations.
Mm-hmm.
They all had different tales. but they all talked about the same creatures. They just had different names for them.
Yeah, tons of different names. Genosqua,
I mean,
Opa.
Sasquatch. That's just, that right there is huge proof, because you have multiple different people with different language even that didn't interact a lot. I mean, they did interact, but it wasn't always, a lot of times it wasn't peaceful interaction.
Oh, no, exactly. You know, and you know,
between the tribes, you know, they fought with each other. Some of them were bitter enemies, and yet they have legends about the same things, and they say the same things about them.
I mean, you could say, like, okay, like the Utes and the Navajo, they were neighbors, so they would have tales of the same types of creatures. But when you're talking about, like I said, you know, take the Iroquois Confederacy, or you take like the Algonquin or the Huron, you know, they're from that far northeast, you know, and then you go all the way across to the west, you know, and you're talking about like the Cheyenne, the Utes, the Klamath, all these different tribes. They were so far apart, they never interacted, but yet they all have legends and stories of Dogman and Bigfoot. Like, they all have stories of these creatures, you know, and they have different versions of what they are. And so you can't, it's so hard to just dismiss that. And then you have the Viking legends. They have legends of both creatures. And they have legends of bear people turning into bears and all this other stuff. The Celts, they had the same thing. I mean, it was just, and it goes on and on and on. My godson, who's by birth, he's Chinese and Vietnamese, but he was raised in the Vietnamese culture, and they have stories of Bigfoot. I mean, there's a lot of stories about these, the hairy men in the jungle throwing the rock apes of Vietnam. China has their own stories. Japan has stories of them up in the mountains. You know, it goes all over the Middle East. I mean, it's crazy. They're everywhere. Yeah. It's just the Yeti, you know, the Tibetans. I mean, everywhere you go, every part of the planet, you know, I used to work with Arabs, and they were the Lebanese, and they had stories of these Bigfoot type creatures that lived in the desert. And there were two different types. There was a physical one that was like an ape-like type creature that lived in the sand area, like they made their home. And then there was this ethereal type of creature that was hairy, that could move in and out of time and space, which was weird. And they called it something else. I can't remember. And then there was this wolf-like creature, you know, the Ayub, which was just a weird type of, you know, sort of a djinn type creature, but it preyed upon another type of djinn that was called the Gula. And so, you know, I began to become interested in studying that, and I learned all kinds of different traditions about these things. So it's interesting, you know, we talk about like me and Ryan.
And that's not even touching on the shapeshifters.
Yeah.
The entities that are shapeshifters, like you brought up the djinn. There's there's what, seven different types of djinn?
And oh, there's
of those
multiple.
Seven types?
Yeah.
Of those seven basic types, I think it's seven or nine. I think it's seven types of djinn that are listed out in the codexes. And of those seven types, all of them are shapeshifters.
Yeah. And they all have subcategories too. What's even weirder is it talks about them having neighbors. They live in what's called the CAFE, and it's spelled like QAFE, the way it's spelled. But it's like they live in this area called the Green Mountains. And I was talking to a guy who claimed to be a remote viewer, and he had talked about, I mean, I don't say he's claimed. No, he actually, I got to say, my team and me, he's actually proved it to us. We took him to task, and he's not interested in coming on and talking at this time, maybe hopefully eventually. But he did tell me that remote viewing that the planet Venus, which is weird. He says that it's green. And it has these mountains, and that he believes that his belief, I'm not saying this is what I believe because I don't know, but in his, you know, what he's ascertained is that there is a type of entity that exists on a different vibrational plane than us, but that they can come in and out of our world, and that their home is Venus, that they live on that. That's their plane of existence. And there's portals that you can just walk in and out of. And they just come in and out of that. And I thought that that was interesting. Now, he didn't say that that's where that's what those were, but he just said that, that there was a type of entity that could do that and that they could warp, you know, what we see is our perception with our eyes. And I thought, that's interesting because the calf is considered – it's supposedly a right angle from a right angle. And it's they live in the Green Mountains, but then they have these, they have neighbors, which I thought was interesting. Like, what are their neighbors? Who are their neighbors? I mean, you hear all these different tales and stories, you know, and you could go on and on and on for months, you know, about, you know, the different types of entities moving in and out of our world at all the time. I mean, mm-hmm. you know, the reptilians. I mean, I've talked to people who. One guy has, who's just dedicated his whole life to studying them, and he's terrified of anyone getting a hold of his work. And I'm just like, you know, I mean, he kind of got aggravated with me when I tried to push him to give me more information. And he was like, are you trying to get my information? I'm like, look, dude, you know, I'm not trying to step on your toes or anything, but I just wanted to get the stories. And, you know, he was telling me that he had done so much work on it, you know, and that he knew as much about them as any human being. So he was telling me all these different things. And he had a lot of stuff that he had given me that I had researched before. And so I thought, maybe this guy's, you know, on the up and up. I'm trying to maybe see about maybe getting him to give me some more information. But he claims that there are multiple types of reptilians. There's some that live here on the earth, some that are interdimensional.
I agree with that.
Yeah, he doesn't know where they come from. And then he has there's two actually that live here, that one that's been here since the dinosaurs, and then one that's relatively new. It's only been here for about, you know, 300,000 or 400,000 years. And then another one that comes from another dimension. And then there's another one that comes from another galaxy. I believe me and you had talked about that, Carrie, the Dog Star, the Sirius, whatever. They come from the same area, and it's a neighboring system. And that they arrived, I don't remember how many thousands of years ago, and that they are at war with what we would know, what we would call the Anunnaki. And they came here fighting the Anunnaki for resources.
I've heard multiple different stories. But if you go into, and this is what I've been working on trying to sort out, is if you go into the Egyptian pantheon, you have Anubis, and Anubis is not dog-headed. He's jackal-headed. They do have a wolf-headed deity whose name escapes me right at the moment. But they also have Sobek, who was crocodile-headed. And after, you know, a few years ago, I could look on the internet and you'd find all kinds of information about kind of crocodile man, alligator man type sightings. Can't find them anymore.
Yeah. My wife talked about one on our show, actually, and it was in Egypt, and the guy jumped into the river. It was crazy. It was like he was driving a cab across a bridge. And the guy had like a face covering, something covering his face. And this was during before the age of COVID. And the veil fell down and the guy saw it like this short crocodilian muzzle. And he jumped into the water, becoming a crocodile and disappeared.
Wow.
Yeah, that's a crazy story. You know, and I don't remember exactly where we got that from, or she read it somewhere. But and I have to go back and listen to that episode. But Sobek. Is also there have been people who have conjured this entity too, or an entity like him, and who claim to be him through Ouija boards.
I don't deal with Ouija boards. and there's people that do, you know, fine. But if you're going to do that, know what you're doing. If you're going to open a portal, close it.
Yeah.
You know, that's responsible. It's not about. You know, it's not a game, because everything you open up, you have to close.
Yeah. And it's crazy because, you know, I tell people it's like deep sea fishing. You might be going for a marlin and you might get a shark. You don't know what you're going to get. So good luck with that. You're throwing chum into the water and just saying, hey, whatever comes. That's not what you want to happen, you know, and you're looking for your dead grandma and you're going to get some demon from somewhere. Who knows?
Well, and we also naturally have two times of the year when the veil is really thin, where, you know, those people can come through.
That's Halloween and Walpurgis, right?
Well, Samhain and...
Samhain.
The exact opposites on the calendar. So they're 6 months opposite of each other.
Yeah. And, when you were talking about the Egyptian-headed wolf creature, I think it was Wepwawet, or I can't pronounce his name, but I believe it was Wepwawet or something like that. I think he was like a war deity or something. I'm not 100% on that. You might want to research that, folks at home. But if I remember my Egyptian mythology correctly, it was called like Wepwawet or something. I don't know. Anyways, I don't want to say his name too many times and he pops up like Beetlejuice. But I'm over here like, what is it again?
Here's another one that drives me crazy. You know, I'll fully admit I'm pagan, but what drives me crazy are people that go, that's evil. Okay. Well, great. It's however it's perceived. But then they'll turn around and they'll do it. and they're afraid of it and they're terrified. But, you know, their God is almighty. And if your God's almighty, you're safe. Yeah. You know, don't play into fear. Fear is its own entity, kind of. It really is. And, you know, what I've learned through my experiences with Dogman is, you know, I was terrified at first. I mean, I went through some horrible fear with that. But the more they came around and the more I realized, you know what? If you're going to get me, you're going to get me. And I just kind of went, well, I remember the exact moment that happened. You know, I'd had Dogman hanging around my house in Colorado. Now, most of my sightings, I don't like go out in the woods and go look for them. Most of my sightings happened in town.
Oh, yeah. They exist in town. That's what people don't get.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, they're right there. And granted, that's where mine was. You know, where I lived in Colorado, you know, you have I-70 runs through the middle of Colorado.
Mm-hmm.
And you have a lot of little towns. Well, I-70 and the river, there's either the Colorado River, where I lived was Eagle River that dumps into the Colorado River. But if you go up the mountain, either way, you're in the wilderness. You know, you're out there. So, you know, you're surrounded by nature, but you're also in civilization. And at one point they said, like 10 years ago, they said that if everything kept growing at the rate it's growing, that from Frisco, Colorado, along the I-70 corridor into Vail, and then through the Vail Valley all the way to .0, you take all of those little tiny towns and string them together, it would be considered a mini-tropolis. That's how many people are there.
Shoot, I'd say if you went from Fort Collins all the way down to Colorado Springs, you could make at this point, I mean, at the rate it's going.
Yeah, I mean, it's hugely, hugely populated.
Mm-hmm.
But I had been having them around my house. I had had an encounter in in just outside of Glenwood Springs, East Glenwood Springs, that was the exact opposite side of Glenwood Springs from where I had the first encounter with the great big one. And it was a really good visual sighting. I saw it really good. I looked over, I saw it. I was terrified. I was looking around. I'm like, I know something's here, but I have to pee. Went in, used the bathroom at the rest stop. And when I came out, I saw it. And I went, oh, okay, I'm fine. It's a Dogman. And looked at it pretty good, watched it. It drove past it. And it was just standing there watching me, moved its head, you know, twitched its ears, just watched me. It was only about 5 or 6 feet tall. Well, about a week or two later, I saw him outside my house.
What color was it? What did it look like? Give us a description.
He looked like a German Shepherd.
Oh.
German Shepherd type head. The other one that I saw was gray. looked a lot more like a wolf, was much bigger. Not when it had been many years ago. Like, now it would have been 28 years ago. Because I was pregnant at the time, 28, 29 years ago. And so it would have been 92. And the one that I saw at the rest stop was a couple of years before, like probably 2013, 2014. Then he followed me home. And I lived 25 miles from where I saw him, down I-70, down the Colorado River, to where it dumps, the Eagle River dumps in, and a couple more miles in Gypsum. And I came home one night. I was in my taxi. I could feel him around. I turned in. I had my brights on, and my bright lights in my taxi dimmed. And I went, damn it, because I knew what that meant. I knew that when my lights dimmed in the whole car, I looked at my phone. My phone battery just went from like 30% to zero. And I went, okay, it's the dog man. They're out. So I pulled up and parked, and I'm looking everywhere. I mean, it must have been amusing to them, because I'm like, I head on a swivel, looking all over the place, my eyes darting around, trying to see where they're at so I can get in the house. And I locked my car, because I was in the taxi, and locked my taxi. And something made me look up. I was parked directly at the end of my trailer. And something made me look up. And I looked up, and my face was like inches, maybe a foot away from his feet. He was sitting on my roof with his feet dangling over the edge, leaning forward, looking at me, grinning at me. And I just looked at him and I went, all right, I'm dead, you know, and I went, you know, and I just kind of, that all went through my head. And I just went, if he wants to kill me, there's nothing stopping him.
And we had talked about this too, like you believe that they have an ability to manipulate energy, like electricity.
Oh, absolutely.
Yeah,
absolutely.
And they can drain batteries. That's something that I've heard a lot of. I got a story, which I believe is what you would call like devil monkeys. Description's completely different than a dog man or a Bigfoot or any of these other canid creatures. Or they were like small, hyper-aggressive primates, but they don't look like any type of primate you've ever seen on Discovery Channel or National Geographic. And they are extremely territorial. But one of the things that happened to these people was that the lights dimmed. The woman had gotten out to relieve herself. And I'm going to tell this story eventually when me and Ryan do the Devil Monkeys. But these things came running out of the woods in like this pack, and the lights began to flicker in the car, which I thought was weird. Were these creatures drawing the energy from that? And I just thought that was weird. Like, what is that? Like, what makes that happen? And so the more you get these stories, like if you just told story after story after story about how that happens in tandem with these encounters, there's got to be something to that. There's some sort of weird correlation there, and that a lot of people just don't get. I worked at a construction site that was haunted in a way that, there was a lot of stuff going on there. They had found bones, and they had to do the building had to stop temporarily while they decided whether or not they were native bones or what they were. They had to figure it out, and they found arrowheads, and it turned out that they were actually settlers that had been killed by a raiding party of Comanches. And so the building was allowed to continue. It wasn't a burial ground or anything like that. But I don't think that one tragic incident was enough to trigger what was going on there. And I had a worker that told me that he saw what he believed was a demon. He's from Mexico, and I've actually worked with him subsequently since on a couple other job sites when I was working for this other large construction company doing security for them. They're still one of our clients to this day. It's been several years. But the first time I'd met him was on that job site. And what he told me was he was painting and the radio began to like change channels. And then the radio just kind of moved across the room and he felt a cold and he turned around and he saw this reddish haired creature with wiry, the way he described it was like wiry hair. He spoke good English. You know, he had been in this country. His name was Alonzo. He's actually a pretty good friend of mine. And he described it as a wiry haired, red haired creature. And it was just standing there right in the apartment that he was painting. And this was when they were building it. And then he tells me this as I'm coming onto my shift and I'm like, oh, great. Thank you. Now I got to think of this weird looking creature, whatever it is you saw. And I noticed that the workers at that job site, they would leave early. They would leave early. And one of our clients that we're working for right now, like we have sites for him right now. I was working for him. This was back in 06. And they would leave early. They would not stay after dark, and that was weird. He couldn't get the trades to stay late. They would always take off right at dark. It was like, well, time to go. I mean, they could be carrying like 2x4s, just drop them and take off. They would leave, and I thought, that is weird. They never do that. And then one of them wrote in Spanish on one of the doors because, you know, they're going to paint the doors eventually anyway. And so they scribbled on there, you know, and it says, "The devil lives here." And I thought, oh, that's nice. That's nice. I'm doing my rounds, locking up the doors, and one of them scribbled that in Spanish. And I thought, that's what I want to read. And I had a lot of problems there. Like me and you had talked about the electrical thing where my truck would go dead. I went through two batteries, and they were both dry cell. I went and I got a really good battery from my mechanic. He's a great mechanic. And I told him, I said, I need a battery, you know. So he got me a dry cell. I can't remember the name of the interstate battery or whatever it is. It was a dry cell battery. And then it went dead. And I took it back and I said, Blaine, there's something wrong with this battery. And he's like, that's crazy. He goes, maybe it was just defective. So he gave me another one and the same thing happened. And then I had a Game Boy that kept going dead. And then I had watch batteries that were burning out. Then my flashlight batteries were burning out. And there were orbs too. Like I saw orbs in between the buildings, and it was another guard that would work opposite of me on the nights when I was off. And he worked two nights a week, and he was seeing all kinds of weird stuff too. And we were comparing notes. And a buddy of mine who I believe he's psychic, he came out there and he said, dude, there's something really bad here. There's a really bad energy here. And what he claimed, he felt like there was a primitive life forms that had used the far, I think he said the far east corner of that property, they had buried their dead there. And I mean, what are you talking about? A primitive life form. And he said, think of like Sasquatch, like a type of hominid. And he said that, but they still live here, like as in the spirit form, you know, they're still there. And that was weird. Like that was a very weird thing. I take his word on that. I mean, I didn't see anything though. Like I saw like corner of the eye, like glimpses of stuff, but I never would catch anything full on. And one time I had a friend come and visit and we were walking around and I was showing him the place because it was a really nice complex they were building. And so I was showing it to him, and him and his wife were going through a divorce or separation, and he was going to look for an apartment. And I said, well, come check it out. I work over there at night. You know, so he showed up with another friend of ours, and the other friend was kind of hanging out by the front on his phone, smoking a cigarette. So me and my buddy went around by the pool, and we heard this splash, and we saw the water moving in the pool. And I thought, dude, this is weird. And I would go into those apartments and I would hear footsteps behind me and stuff. And these were new apartments. So It was a lot of weird stuff that was happening at that place. And I felt it because I'm very sensitive to that stuff, but I thought that was an odd observation from my buddy that told me that, you know, he felt like there was something there in the corner of that property. And he doesn't really hang out with me much anymore because he said that when he does, a lot of weird stuff happens, and he's gotten to the point where he feels physically drained by the incidents that take place in his life. So he tries to avoid being in any kind of like paranormal situations. And so I told him, I was like, you know, And I mean, and I told him, I said, it's not me, is it? And he goes, no, it's not you. He goes, it's just that there's stuff that, you know, that manifests, you know, and it'll manifest around people that are sensitive to it. So two of us hanging around together, huh. Something's going to happen. And something always happened when me and him were together. And, you
right. Well, and I think it's important to cleanse too, you know.
Oh, you have to.
I know, yeah. This is, you know, the, there's people out there that are like, well, sage doesn't do anything to demons. Well, you know, yeah, it does. But not everything's a demon either.
Yeah.
It sets up a boundary. It cleanses things out. I mean, you can go, I mean, I don't know that you're Catholic, but you can go through the Catholic Church. They burn lavender. They burn different things in their censers. Most, you know, they're famous for having the censers that put out the smoke. It's not a pagan idea or idealism to sage. It's multiple cultures, multiple religions use that, and there's a reason for it, you know. And then there's always prayer, but sometimes if you're in it and things get attached to you, because you can walk down the street anywhere, and there's entities out there that will jump on you and attach to you. And it's good to get rid of those things.
Yeah.
I mean, you don't have to be doing anything bad for them to be there. Maybe somebody else did something bad in that relative area. Who knows?
Yeah, and you can be open for attachment. And the thing is, I'm not a Catholic. I was actually baptized as a Catholic as a baby. Then my mom converted. My mom and dad both converted. They became Baptists. I was baptized as a Baptist, then later on they became non-denominational, and I was baptized as a non-denominational. But I've kind of made my own way, my own path. Me and you have talked about that and about religion and all that. I have friends of every stripe. I don't judge or discriminate against anyone for anything. Race, religion, gender, I'm very open.
I don't either.
I like to hear everybody's side of things, you know, and it's interesting to get everyone's perspective. So let me ask you this. Let me ask you a question, Carrie. And I already know the answer to this because, I know everything, but I'm just kidding. I know the answer because me and you've spoken off camera, you know, at length. So, but you have a unique view. A lot of people, you make a distinction between like the different types of Bigfoot. We already been over that. But like you make a distinction between Dogman and werewolves, right?
Yes, absolutely. Dogman and werewolves are not the same thing. And werewolves and SWs, which it's nighttime out right now, so I'm not going to talk about the SWs.
Yeah.
Are very different. They're very different things too. And the Native American version is not the only version of an SW. There's an Americana version, which is from a white culture that is practicing. I don't know that their culture is as perverse as the Native American version has become. Now, there's ostensibly still shamans out there that are Native American that practice shapeshifting that are not SWs. So that's a different thing, too. Now, the difference, the SWs have perverted the practice so badly, and they're doing things in reverse and not for the people, and that is the big differentiating factor. They're doing things that are not for their people,
and yeah, it's not very just self-serving.
Yeah, very, very much self-serving. And it's not just the Navajos that have that belief, but they're only called, you know, everybody thinks it's a Southwest Native American thing and they're all Navajo. No, well, they're not. Many cultures have that belief and that practice. And it extends from the beginning of time, go back to the campfire and the cave. All cultures, all people that were on this earth, it's believed, started as a shamanistic tribal system, to where they had their shaman. Their shaman was their medicine person that was their their spiritual leader, their protector, did a lot of things for them and also did a lot of rituals to help them with the hunt and different things like that. And it goes back to that culture. And it does, even with, like you were talking about, the Vikings or the Old Norse, with the berserkers and the Ulfarks and those different, the Ulfarks were the soldiers of Odin. They were the ones that wore the wolf shirts. There were multiple different names for them, but the berserkers were the bear shirts.
The bears.
Yeah, the ones that turned into bears. But then there's werewolves, and the werewolves are, from what I have been told, which I don't know how much into that story I want to get, but I had met a person that claimed to have been a werewolf, and that person told me some things that were later backed up for me by other people that didn't know this person. So I have to believe that he was right and he was telling me the truth. And I also believe he was telling me the truth of what he believed to be true. So but he claimed to be a werewolf, and he said that he was born that way. It was genetic. He was traveling with 5 or 6 other guys. I don't remember exactly because I didn't really meet the other guys. In an RV with an older woman, or a woman that was older than them. I shouldn't say older woman because I'm probably that age now. And they were traveling the country looking for a place to be and trying to learn how to acclimate into culture and society. But one of the biggest things that he explained to me is they're human, they're people. And no matter what, they're only people. They're not controlled by this beast or this urge. And he, you know, another distinction that he made is there is a difference between being a carnivore and being a cannibal. You know, that is like a point I made the other day. Somebody was saying how horrible and evil and dangerous dogman is. But the most dangerous species on the planet is probably humans. And every one of us probably walks around among people every day and never has anything bad happen. But then you turn on your news and you find out somebody somewhere got killed.
Oh, yeah.
So, you know, there's people out there that have a screw loose. And yeah, there's, I absolutely agree. Dogman has the potential to be very dangerous. But I make the distinction between being peaceful, which is a choice, and being harmless, which is not, they're not harmless, but they're definitely peaceful if they choose to be.
Is that your cat in the background?
Yeah, sorry. Yeah, we've got a big tomcat running around outside, and he's, my cat wants to fight with him.
Mm.
My cat doesn't get to go outside, so.
Yeah, it's probably a good idea.
Big. Yeah, he talks big while he's inside.
And so, let me ask you this: like you, when you were, what you were talking about, because I know that there are Europeans that have the legends of werewolves, but there are pretty much from anywhere that there were wolves, all the way across from Europe, all the way across Asia, there are legends of werewolves all the way into North America. And it's odd because You make a distinction between a skinwalker, a werewolf, and a dogman. Now, what I don't understand is how you can tell them apart. That's the key to me. I just can't grasp like that. That's very hard for me.
Well,
to...
like I said when I was talking about my encounter with that great big one, I didn't run over and tap him on the shoulder and say, "Hey, are you a dogman or are you a werewolf?" And to this day, I don't know. You know, I don't think, I mean, I just by the law of averages, I'm going to say that a lot of people that have had encounters may have encountered a werewolf. They may have encountered an SW, or maybe it was a dogman. You know, really, it boils down to behavior more than, and between the dogman and the werewolf, you're going to have more trouble because werewolves, people that have that ability, okay, if they exist and they have that ability and they're not cannibals, like Hollywood wants us to believe they're cannibals, but, you know, we could say a lot about Hollywood considering what's going on in the rest of the world right now. Do we really want to believe everything they put out there?
Yeah, that's for sure.
You know, and maybe there's an agenda on that to make.
I've heard a lot of stories about Hollywood actually being vampires too. I don't even want to get into that, but
well, maybe it's a pipe dream that they think they can control the werewolves. But anyway, I'll just say that we don't want to get into all that. I'll just say that, you know, if there is a person that could shapeshift, which, you know, those people rolling their eyes everywhere collectively as they listen to this. But if that were possible and they're out there, what would motivate them to attack you? Because once they transform, they're still human on some level. And what always scared me the most about werewolves was that they were animalistic abilities with a human brain.
Yeah.
So unless you seriously pissed him off or her off, why would they go after you?
Well, what would be the purpose of being one, though?
Well, they're born that way. What's the purpose of being a monkey? What's the purpose of being a human being? What's the, you know, for whatever reason, they're out there.
And so, but let me ask, okay, so you've had what you believe, and I believe it too. I just was taken aback when you told me and Nelly your werewolf encounter. So right now, now that we're on the subject of the werewolves and all that.
Shall I just tell the story so that everybody can hear it?
Yeah. And so I was just, it was a very compelling story, and I would like to get into that. So that's all time we have for tonight, folks. We're going to be back with part two with Carrie Eaton, and she's going to give us her werewolf encounter. And we're going to continue our discussion with Dogman, werewolves, and Bigfoot with Carrie Eaton. Thank you for tuning in. Be back next week at 7:00 p.m. on Friday for more Paranormal Roundtable. Good night.